getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
And it's knocked away here by Marchand, who will scoop back in behind his own net, pick it up, and play it up for Connolly. Connolly in center ice, hitman pass for Marchand. Partial break, moves in a backhand shot, he scores! Brad Marchand, great wheels, and a great backhand on the deke, and it's 3-2 Boston.
And with that goal at the 18:45 mark of the first period on Thursday night, the Boston Bruins took a 3-2 lead. It turns out to be the game-winning goal as the Jets go down to defeat 6-2 at the hands of the Boston Bruins on home ice. The Jets yet again failing to win three games in a row for the seventh time this season. Sort of an incredible stat when you think about it. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show alongside my colleague Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Richard Pollock away from the program this week. Ezzy, you look at the two Jets games that they have played since we were last on air on Monday night. You have Tuesday, you go into St. Louis, you play an absolute shutdown textbook road game where you neutralize a very good opponent, you hold them to a minimal number of shots, you win 2-1 in a shootout. You think maybe now the Jets are going to get on a run. They've won two in a row following up on last Saturday's win in Colorado. But as it's been for this team all season long, one step forward and then the two steps back on Thursday night against the Boston Bruins. A game that was close for the first period, close for the second period, and that there was no scoring, but the Bruins put their foot on the gas pedal and dominated the third, winning 6-2 over the Jets.
Yeah. Well, first of all, happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you to you too. We both brought each other chocolate.
Right.
Which is very sweet.
Well, that's what good friends Drew do.
Good friends Drew do? Okay, yes.
I brought you some chocolates.
You did?
I brought some. Rory can have some chocolates too.
That's what you do. I brought you some chocolate brownies.
I thought it would be a little bit.
I also brought you some fruit and vegetables, but that's for a separate issue altogether. I'm now grocery shopping for you is basically what's happening.
I appreciate it. I have an empty fridge at home, so that's good. I was going to buy you flowers, but I thought that would be a little over the top. So
a little bit, but I appreciate the thought anyways.
Now we got that out of the way. Let's talk about the Jets here. You mentioned the 2-1 road victory over the St. Louis Blues, and that was to me one of the more impressive victories for the Jets maybe over the last month or so, just because of who they were playing. The Jets have had a lot of troubles against the St. Louis Blues, as you know, Drew, and they went in there and they played a very solid game, winning all those individual battles, keeping it really close and grinding out a win. That's something that you have to do when you're this many points out of a playoff spot.
It's but a game then, the team would have played last season in their stretch drive to making the playoffs, a win like that where they went into St. Louis, at, when Andre Pavlik had that, what did he have, three shutouts in a row or whatever it was towards the end of the year. They went into St. Louis. That was the kind of game they played last season.
Everyone was on the same page, Drew. They kept their defensive structure, all of those things that are musts in most hockey wins, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're in a back-and-forth, high-scoring type of game where maybe you lose some of that defensive structure. But the game against Boston, to me, was so disappointing because it was really two games in one.
Sure.
I mean, the Winnipeg Jets were right in that game, and I realize Boston gets a goal early. Patrice Bergeron gets them on the scoreboard less than 2 minutes into the game, but Blake Wheeler responds right after, and then Nikolai Ehlers responds right after Louis Erickson's goal. So the Winnipeg Jets, even though they were never leading in this game, they were constantly responding and playing very well offensively and controlling the play for much of the first half of the game. And then everything falls apart. And I don't remember seeing the Jets only have two shots in the second half of a game. And it was really upsetting to see how the Jets fell apart there in the second and third periods because, as you mentioned, this team has not won three games in a row.
Yeah.
Everybody knows at this point that it's a long shot for the Jets to make the playoffs. I mean, let's not kid ourselves, Drew.
Yeah.
The Jets are 9 points behind the Colorado Avalanche, for fifth in the Central, and we expect five teams to make it from the Central.
Yeah.
So you're 9 points out of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were 7 points out of it going into the game against Boston. Colorado wins Thursday night, so now they're back to being 9 points. The point is, they have to be more desperate than that. And, you know, you could say, okay, well, if Mark Scheifele puts that goal in, if you remember, he had a really good chance there kind of midway through the second period. If he scores there, ties the game up, well, it's a completely different game. The Jets obviously have a better shot at winning, but it was the way they lost. I was surprised also that Connor Hellebuyck was pulled after one period. I didn't think that the problem was Connor Hellebuyck. I mean, maybe one of the goals was his fault. Brad Marchand's breakaway goal was certainly not Connor Hellebuck's fault. And I know everybody's getting on Connor Hellebuyck now, and everybody's going to his glove side and everything like that. I mean, Connor Hellebuyck has been incredible, starting 13 games in a row for the Jets. I mean, he's been a savior of sorts in net with Andre Pavlik out of it. And I realize the Jets have been forced to send Connor Hellebuyck down now.
We'll talk about that coming up next segment.
Yeah, but Drew, that certainly wasn't the problem. I mean,
I think the problem is you look at, you know, Thursday night, and it's been a microcosm of the entire season, and that, you know, the Jets, the fact that they have not won a game in which they've trailed entering the third period is an astounding stat. And it's an absolute shame, you know, the players to have not been able to mount one third period comeback. It's a damning statement about the play of the team when they're facing adversity. When they faced any adversity this year, and trailing entering the third period is probably the hockey definition of adversity, they haven't won a game. And it's not like they're trailing by multiple goals, and it's not like they're always trailing against excellent teams. I mean, Boston's a good team, but you've seen the Jets play well against them before. They were down 3-2 entering the third period. You're on home ice, and it took all of 35 seconds for the Bruins to make it 4-2. And really, at any point in time, after it became 4-2 there, at any point in time, I never even for a second thought the Jets were coming back.
Well, no, after that 4-2 goal, you're right, it was over.
There were still 19 and a half minutes left in the game.
Right, but the way that they were playing, and you can look at it and you could start saying, well, this team was vulnerable. You can say that this team has kind of a defeatist attitude. I don't necessarily know that that is the only reason. They're just not winning close games. And that stat that you mentioned, Drew, the Toronto Maple Leafs are the only other team that haven't come back after being down after two periods. There's only two teams.
Yeah.
And then Vancouver's the only team that hasn't won three games in a row as well, which is amazing. I mean, the Winnipeg Jets last year had several 5 or 6 game winning streaks, right? Winless streaks.
You need to have...
Pardon me.
Winning streaks. Yeah,
that's what I meant.
Point streaks is what you're saying, yeah. You need to have those to be successful in this league. I mean, it's not a Herculean task. Good teams, playoff teams, stretch or, you know, rattle off multiple wins in a row. It's just what they do. They don't win only two and then lose two. That's, you know, and if you do that by, you know, April 10th, you're not going to be playing hockey anymore for the season.
I think the Jets have not been strong enough in their own zone at home for whatever reason. 6 of 7 losses at home. It's just unacceptable. And they haven't been that good on the road this year, Drew.
Wow.
So
only lately have they been, you know, it was a role reversal. To start the year, or not to start the year, but, you know, in the middle part of the year, they were okay at home and lousy on the road. Lately, they've been good on the road and just lousy at home.
And what's really unfortunate is that, as we talked about before, coming off of wins, consecutive wins, mm-hmm. St. Louis winning 2-1, you have an opportunity to beat a Boston Bruins team. And, you know, we should say that Boston Bruins team was coming off of a 9-2 loss.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, they wanted to prove that they could get right back in the win column. And they also were in the first game of a 6-game road trip. So, I mean, that was a big game for them as well. They're fighting for their playoff lives. That Boston Bruins team, by the way, the defense might not be what it was back in 2011 when they won the Stanley Cup. But it's still a pretty good team. And they might win... They might, pardon me, make the playoffs this year.
Yeah.
It's not a bad team. I mean, it's not a great team, but it's a pretty good team.
They have 64 points right now, so they're tied for they have the first wild card spot, but, you know, they're also tied with Tampa Bay, so, you know, they could just as easily jump in into the Atlantic Division playoff spots right there. But you're absolutely right. Their defense themselves might not be great, But I thought the team defense, the five-man unit that they had, was pretty good.
Well, Drew, they still have Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci as their first two centers.
Yeah.
The same centers they had before. Brad Marchand's on pace for 40 goals right now.
Yeah. I mean, nobody talks about him because they think he's such a rat.
David Pastrnak's a really good young winger. I mean, they've got they might lose Louis Eriksson there, but you've got Ryan Spooner, who's a good, a smaller but really talented forward. I mean, they've still got a lot of talent there, and you know, Chara and Seidenberg have gotten a little bit older, and they, of course, they miss guys like Johnny Boychuk and Dougie Hamilton. But it's a good team. Tuukka Rask is still a legitimate number one goaltender. He had a really good game, I thought, especially after letting in a couple goals in the first period. But it could have been a situation where you have Edmonton and Carolina coming up, two teams that probably won't be playoff teams.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have put together a 4 or 5 game winning streak and then probably pulled yourself maybe to within 5 points of the Avalanche. Now, here we are, February 14th, and 13th. It's going to be almost impossible for the Jets to make the playoffs. Well, I mean, they're going to have to probably win, I don't know, 22 of their last 28 games.
It's not going to happen. I mean, it's not going to happen. I don't want to be the bearer of bad news here, but anybody who thinks that this team all of a sudden is going to flick a magical switch and, you know, rattle off 15 out of 18 or 18 out of 20 is a little bit foolish. I will say, though, Ezzy, if there was a possibility of that happening, I thought the catalyst would have been Byfuglien signing on Monday. And so you go into Tuesday, they play well. And like you said, you play well at home on Thursday against Boston. Then you go on the road, and it's not the world's most difficult road trip to start, certainly with Edmonton and Carolina. And then, but exactly your point. If you're able to do that, if you're able to string together a couple wins, all of a sudden you got 5 in a row. Now, I don't think it's going to be enough, but it's a start. Instead, they lay an egg at home. I don't buy these arguments that it's tough to play at home and you're coming back just for one game, blah, 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 blah. You know, you're at home. You expect to win games when you're playing at home, especially against teams you've already beaten on the road, albeit earlier in the year.
And what's unfortunate, too, is I think in previous years, the Jets really got a boost from the home crowd, and they were always a team that had a solid home record. And this year, it just hasn't been the case.
Well, the team hasn't given the home crowd anything to cheer about. That's my thought on that. Play better at home. You don't think fans want to spend their $100 or $200 to attend these games want to cheer for their home team? Of course they do. What's there to cheer about, from the halfway point of that second period onwards? The team gets outshot brutally. They don't control the play at all. I mean, give me something to cheer about. That's all I ever want as a fan is give me an effort and give me something to cheer about. I'm not a trained seal. I'm not just going to clap mindlessly because, I've paid money to do so.
And after that first period, there were a few fights there, the Blake Wheeler, Patrice Bergeron fight and all that. But after that first period, after the first half of the second period, there wasn't a lot to cheer about, right?
Well, it seemed like they got demoralized with how they were controlling the play, but not able to get the equalizer past Tuukka Rask. And to me, that's a sign of a team that's mentally weak.
Well, it could be that. It's also just a team that hasn't been able to win close games this year. They haven't been able to push games to the overtime in the shootout, get those bonus points.
But if you can't do that, if you can't get the equalizing goal, why not? Why can you never get that equalizing goal in the third period?
Well, I mean, it's partially, you're not getting the bounces. It's partially because you just aren't a very good team. I mean, there's a lot of factors. I think if you're the Winnipeg Jets this year, if you were able to get a few more wins in your division, pick up a few more wins on the road, get a few more power play goals. I mean, there have been so many reasons why the Jets don't win games. I mean, every game seems to be something new. I mean, this game, who expected the Jets to be out shooting the Bruins 28-11 at one point?
Nobody.
And then end up finishing the game getting outshot. I mean, they only had 2 shots in 20 minutes of play, Drew.
And that's a team that just threw in the towel. That's a team that is mentally, that couldn't find another gear in which to get an equalizing goal. And when it became too difficult, they wilted.
See, I don't think they threw in the towel.
I think they
didn't play well. I mean, and again, you're talking about a team whose last home game was against Carolina, where they gave up 4 goals in the first period.
Played
so the way they've played at home is just, it's disappointing.
If they played so well for the first half of the game, what changed between the first half and the second half, aside from the fact that their opponent found another level and the Jets couldn't match it?
I don't have the answer to that because I think everyone was expecting this to be a close game, a one-goal game. The way the first period and the early part of the second period played out, the Jets were looking good, and then a light switch went off and everything changed. And was that the Jets being out-coached? Claude Julien's a good coach. I mean, Boston, you know, was controlling the possession, everything like that, and the Jets were taking some bad penalties towards the end of the second period and early third period and all of that. I don't know. I mean, but the Jets are now in a position where they almost have to start thinking about next year.
Well, I would certainly think that they are in that position already. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the decision to send Connor Hellebuck down to the AHL, and we'll talk about tonight's Jets-Oilers game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
I've been practicing for a while, so, every practice is big for me, and then I feel really good. And yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready to go. It's up to the coach who he decides going to play. So, I said that a few days ago that I'm ready. I was ready, and I'm ready now. So,
injured no longer, that is Winnipeg Jets goaltender Andre Pavlik. He is off of IR. Do not yet know if he will get the start tonight in Edmonton, but we do know that Connor Hellebuck has been sent down to the AHL's Manitoba Moose with Pavlik being taken off of IR. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home, eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Drew, I would guess and I would put money on Michael Hutchinson starting tonight.
Really? I was going to say the opposite.
Well, I mean, Andre Pavlik hasn't played in 3 months.
It's true.
Michael Hutchinson played last game against the Boston Bruins, his former team.
Also true.
I would think that they're going to go with Hutchinson. This is an important game, even though you could say that the Jets are completely out of the playoff picture.
Sure.
They still want to rebound with a good performance against the Oilers. And by the way, whoever goes in net, I don't think they're going to be happy that they're facing Connor McDavid, who has 12 points in 6 games since coming back from injury. We'll talk about that a little bit later with Dave Jamieson.
Yeah.
But I would think they're going to go with Hutchinson. We're going to find out here in the next couple hours after the game day skate.
Yeah.
But I would think they'd go with Hutchinson. And
I'll tell you why I would think they would go with Pavlik. If you're activating him off IR and, you know, obviously you deem him healthy enough to get into a game, I would think that you know, he needs the game action at this point in time. There's no reason to, you know, hold him back any longer. He's healthy. He's better than Michael Hutchinson is as a goaltender, I would suggest. And so you got to put him out there and see what he's got. Now, unfortunately for Pavlik, it's a little bit, you know, from the frying pan into the fire with, as you mentioned, Connor McDavid being the opponent facing him coming down the ice.
Yeah, but you're going to put Andre Pavlik in eventually. And it doesn't matter if it's the Edmonton Oilers or the Carolina Hurricanes, right? I mean, the Carolina Hurricanes have Eric Staal and Jordan Staal and Jeff Skinner. Every team has players that can hurt you, right?
Sure.
I just think in this situation, Andre Pavlik, because he hasn't played, as I mentioned, in so long, 3 months, and Michael Hutchinson is game ready and he's been playing, I think that they'll go with Hutchinson. And that is just based on my own take,
hunch.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think, let's get this out of the way. And I know you saw me going off on Twitter yesterday, but
I did.
This whole notion of tanking, can we address this right now? I think people are misusing this word here.
Sure.
When a team is losing and falling down the standings, that's not tanking. Like, and for fans to want their team to purposely lose or lose so that they get the better chance of getting a higher draft pick, I understand that. But no team is ever going to purposely lose.
The players, Winnipeg Jets. You're saying the players.
The players, the management, everything, Drew. I mean,
I'm not so sure about management, Ezzy.
This isn't 1984 Pittsburgh Penguins when, you know, they sent players down to the AHL because they were trying to get Mario Lemieux.
Sure.
I mean, that doesn't exist anymore. And not only does that not exist, if you try to do that, you could easily not get the first overall pick because there's a draft lottery. Mm-hmm. They put the draft lottery there for that exact reason, right? So I just think it's funny that everybody thinks that Connor Hellebuck was sent down to the AHL because this is somehow
a tank job. Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. They sent Connor Hellebuck down because their alternative was carry three goalies or put Michael Hutchinson on waivers. I don't think they wanted to lose him on waivers, and I do think he'd be claimed. I think 100% he gets claimed.
Yeah, I can accept your answer. I mean, I don't think that carrying three goalies was probably a best decision because these guys need to play. I mean, you know, a guy like Connor Hellebuck, a young player like that, he needs to play. And Andrei Pavlik, you're not going to send him down to the minors because he's going to get claimed exactly. You know.
Well, and he's your number one goalie.
You're right.
People forget. I mean, going into this year,
yeah,
he was the clear number one goalie. And that's not, you know, anything against Michael Hutchinson. It's just because of the way Andrei Pavlik played in the second half of the season. He was their goalie in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Michael Hutchinson has struggled a little bit this year. I still think he's a good goalie.
I mean, the goalie, to me, it's clear that the goalie of the future is Connor Hellebuck.
Right.
This is a goaltender in Hellebuck who has struggled the last week, 10 days. He's been pulled from a couple of different games. Whether or not those are all his fault is certainly a fair point, and it's certainly arguable that it wasn't. But I don't see any downside from sending him. Look, this team's not going to make the playoffs. So it's not like you're battling, you know, for a playoff spot where every team is up, where every game matters and it's a point here and it's a point there. And, oh my God, we lost out possibly because of some poor goaltending today. I think Hellebuck should go down to the AHL, to the Moose. I think he'll play well for the Moose. And I would expect that he's going to be back up with the Jets at some point. You know, I think he's back up with the Jets before the end of the season.
It's possible. And I mean, it's possible that the Jets move one of these goaltenders.
I don't see it.
I mean, it's.
I don't see it. Who's in the market for a goaltender? I've heard that.
Calgary?
Well, fine. Calgary, but Calgary's not in any rush to do it because they're not in the playoffs.
Right,
spot.
But they still want a goalie potentially for next year.
Absolutely. But I've heard the argument
Montreal?
Montreal is right now playing better hockey than they were, but again, they're not in a playoff spot right now.
But they're in the market for a goalie.
Do you think they are?
Well, if Carey Price doesn't come back this year, they are.
If Carey Price doesn't come back this year, it's a lost season. Why are they going to trade an asset for a goaltender?
They're not going to give up. They're still going to try to make the playoffs.
Yeah, but they're going to try and make the playoffs with Ben Scrivens. They're not going to try and make and Mike Condon. They're not going to trade
Michael Hutchinson or Andrei Pavlik is better than Ben Scrivens.
I agree, but I don't think Montreal is going to trade you an asset to acquire that to acquire Pavlik and his contract. I've heard people say they're going to showcase Pavlik, you know, from now until the trade deadline.
I didn't say they're going to showcase
Pavlik. I know you didn't say. I heard people
say.
Well,
how does Hellebuck get back in the NHL if both of those goaltenders are healthy?
If one
of them isn't traded.
At some point in time, you're okay with carrying three goaltenders probably.
Name one team that carries three goalies right now.
Well, the Flames did briefly earlier in the season.
That was 2 weeks, maybe.
Yeah, they don't. I agree. But if March comes along, you know, 2 weeks from the trade deadline, if March comes along and you're clearly not a playoff team, if you clearly sold whatever assets you have, what do you care if you carry three goaltenders at that point in time and you can play them all sparingly?
But there's no point to carry three goaltenders if you're out of it. Why would you carry three goaltenders and you're out of it just to get a guy some more playing time?
There isn't an overwhelming point. You're absolutely right. I just don't think that Hellebuck spends the rest of the season in the AHL, but it's also a conundrum because I don't think the Winnipeg Jets, I don't think anybody looks at Pavlik or Hutchinson and says, that's a guy we need to acquire.
Hellebuck only comes back if there's an injury or if one of the goalies is traded.
Maybe Hutchinson if there's a team that thinks he's an upgrade on their backup goaltender. You know, maybe the New York Islanders aren't happy with their backup goaltender, and they think that that Michael Hutchinson is a better option.
True. If there's an injury to a goaltender, Andrei Pavlik or Michael Hutchinson would be absolutely attractive to a team. Hey, look, I realize that Michael Hutchinson has had a tough year here, but he's still a good goaltender, and he was still the number one goaltender for the Jets for a big stretch of last season.
Mm-hmm.
The point here is, I think even if the Jets were 1 point out of the playoffs, I think sending Hellebuck back to the AHL was an option.
I think it was.
We don't know what the Jets were thinking. I mean, it was a tough decision to make. People forget that the plan wasn't to have Connor Hellebuyck starting 13 straight games this year. I mean, the only reason he started those games is because Andrei Pavlik was injured, right?
Well,
good
and
for him.
And not only that, but and Michael Hutchinson struggled when he had the opportunity to be the number one after
right.
Pavlik was injured.
And good on Connor Hellebuyck, and he is the goalie of the future. Absolutely. Connor Hellebuyck and Eric Comrie are the goalies of the future, and they're having great seasons in the AHL right now. I think there's a situation right now where the Jets would possibly move a goaltender if they think that one of those goaltenders doesn't factor in to the plan next year.
I agree with you. I think the Jets would like to move one of those goaltenders, one of Pavlik or Hutchinson. I don't think Hellebuck's an option, but I think the Jets would consider moving one of them. My thought is that I don't think there's a market for either of them in the NHL right now. There's no team that's knocking down the Jets' door in order to try and get one of those goaltenders and giving up a decent asset to do so.
Right, and as for
sending Hellebuyck down, I think that it was an easier decision for the Jets organization to make because he has not played as well over the past week or 10 days as he had earlier in the month when he was absolutely stellar. If he plays well against Boston, he played well against St. Louis.
I don't think that matters at all. You still have to put Michael Hutchinson on waivers or carry three goalies.
Right.
So I think that decision wasn't really impacted at all by the way he played against Boston. I think that they made the choice that Connor Hellebuyck was better suited to go back to the Manitoba Moose, split time with Eric Comrie, and they want Andrei Pavlik to play here. I don't think they're showcasing him. Right. He's under contract for one more year. I don't think Andrei Pavlik's going anywhere.
I agree with you.
I was saying that if they do decide to bring Connor Hellebuyck back, it'll be because they want to move one of Andrei Pavlik or Michael Hutchins. So I don't think that this move means that the Jets are giving up on this season, and I don't think it necessarily means that one of the goalies is going to be traded. I'm just saying that these are all options, right?
They're definitely options. I won't argue with you there whatsoever. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to bring in Andrew Gross. He covers the New York Rangers. A lot of trade talk circulating around the Rangers. Are they possibly in the Andrew Ladd market as well? We'll talk about it next with Andrew Gross on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Andrew Gross. Andrew covers the New York Rangers for the Record newspaper in New Jersey. Andrew, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
How's everyone?
Doing very well. How about yourself, Andrew?
Good. A little chilly, but you guys are no stranger to that.
Well, without even knowing what the temperature is in New York, you want to trade?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so. Rangers and Kings played an entertaining game last night, a 5-4 Kings victory over the Rangers. The Blue Shirts, of course, still without Rick Nash and Ryan McDonough. McDonough out with a concussion, Rick Nash out with a knee injury. I want to start with the McDonough concussion. It, of course, came as a result of the Wayne Simmonds punch to the face. Were you surprised that there was no supplemental discipline from the NHL, and is there still bad blood entering between the Rangers and the Flyers entering tomorrow night's rematch between those two teams?
Well, I mean, second question first, yes. I mean, but that, that would go whether Simmonds had, in Alain Vigneault's words, sucker punched McDonough or not. I mean, there's always bad blood between the Rangers and Flyers. It's been that way going back to, the Bobby Clark days. Was I surprised there was no supplemental discipline? Yes, not so much actually for the punch to the face, because stuff like that happens in scrums, and obviously it was a horrible, it's horrible when a guy gets concussed, but it's kind of in the rule book that if you throw a stick at a referee, you get suspended there. So I thought between the stick incident and throwing throwing a punch there with his glove still on. I thought there was something in there. Of course, you know, Wayne Simmonds, for as hard and as physical as he plays, he's never been suspended by the NHL, and he insisted this week he's not a dirty player. You know, he feels awful about hurting McDonough, you know, so, but I don't think that's going to matter at all tomorrow when the teams meet.
You know, Andrew, Drew mentioned previously about the loss last night to the LA Kings, but before that, the Rangers had gone on a nice four-game winning streak, and you wrote about it for the Record newspaper that the Rangers seem to be a looser group. They're having more fun in the dressing room. Why was that fun out of the dressing room before that?
I mean, you know, it's all tied together, but it starts with the fact that Henrik Lundqvist was not playing the way he was at the beginning of the season, which is the way he was playing, you know, the way he normally does towards the end of a season. Hank, you know, he wasn't bad. He just wasn't at Hank level. And, you know, he wasn't fixing the mistakes that the team made, and you know, I think defensively they were not playing cohesively. You know, a couple of guys on the team have, you know, are a step slower this year. You know, I'm thinking Girardi and Staal, for as great as they've been for this organization, they're just, you know, there have been stretches where they've struggled through the season, and just for about a month and a half, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, it just seemed like a grind and a slog. And like I said, you know, I mentioned to Hank after he said, you know, the Pittsburgh, the 3-0 win on Wednesday night, it was fun. I said, I haven't heard you say that in a long time. And he, you know, he was all smiles. So I think that's a very good sign for this team. And even after the loss to the Kings last night, which was kind of an odd game in itself, you know, two backup goalies, neither one playing particularly well, the Rangers came out of that thinking that, you know, they had played a very tough, strong, physical team, you know, pretty well, and, you know, they lost on a bad bounce there.
You know, Andrew, because we don't know how long Ryan McDonagh is going to be out of the lineup, you know, you hear a lot about that the Rangers are going to move Keith Yandel before the trade deadline, but with the uncertain health status of Ryan McDonagh, is it possible that the Rangers are actually going to go out and try to acquire a defenseman as opposed to trading one away?
Well, I think anything is certainly possible. You know, I know there is a belief within the Rangers organization that they should be competing for a Stanley Cup this year. And if you trade away Keith Yandel, you know, I don't, you know, obviously you get something back for him. And if, you know, you're telling me you're bringing back like a, you know, a top six wing, then I say maybe it makes sense. But, you know, let's just take Keith Yandel out of the defense core equation, and that significantly weakens this team and, you know, makes maybe some slim odds for winning the Stanley Cup this year much, much, you know, decreases them significantly. So it's a real, you know, it's a dilemma for this team right now because, you know, they don't want to be in a position where they don't think they can compete for the Cup, and at the same time, you know, you there's a good chance you lose Yandel for nothing then, because I don't think they can fit. You know, he's having a good season. He's going to get about $6 million on the open market, and right now I don't think the Rangers can fit that into their salary cap. And certainly, if the salary cap goes down, then there's no shot of fitting that in without significantly altering the roster, which is tough because there are a lot of no trade and no movement clauses on the team. So, you know, I think it's tough. You know, you want to keep Keith Yandel because he significantly makes the team better.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Andrew Gross. Andrew covers the New York Rangers for the Record newspaper in New Jersey. Andrew, sort of along those same lines about the trading, the trade deadline being a little more than 2 weeks away. Rick Nash is out of the Rangers lineup currently. He carries their highest price tag at $7.8 million. And you've heard rumblings, you know, maybe that Ken Hitchcock in St. Louis would be interested in acquiring him for Kevin Shattenkirk, who's rumored to be on the block in St. Louis. Is that a non-starter from your perspective? Is Rick Nash definitely not available, or is there a possibility that you could see a match going there, you know, give a little bit of salary relief to the Rangers while shoring up the back end?
You know, given the history of how Glenn Sather has run the team, and I'm not saying this in a bad way, I never discount anything. I really think they kick the tires on everything and anything possible. And, you know, if it gets them a good player, if it reduces their salary cap, you know, if the contracts are movable, then, you know, I certainly think, you know, it's open for discussion in their room. Whether they do it, whether we ever find out that they talked about it is another question. But, you know, the Rangers, the way Glenn has operated the organization, are very, very proactive in discussing player movement. So, you know, I never discount anything with this franchise. Now, you know, obviously, you know, Rick is, it's kind of, you know, he's day-to-day, but, you know, he has this bone bruise, and, you know, he still is experiencing pain walking. So, you know, the Rangers are really in a holding pattern with Rick, you know, as far as his health and when he might be able to get back. Just circling back to McDonough for a minute and Yandel, you know, today could be a pretty significant day because Mac got out on the ice yesterday, you know, albeit without hockey equipment. You know, he was just in a tracksuit, but, you know, he skated lightly. He had been on the bike for 2 days prior to that. So, you know, if there are no symptoms, this is part of the protocol where they start amping up his workouts a little bit and they see how he reacts. And, you know, if he can handle more today, that's certainly a good sign on his road to recovery.
Andrew, you mentioned Glenn Sather and how it's, you know, all options are on the table or generally were on the table. They'd consider any sort of different possibilities. Now that Jeff Gorton has the official title of general manager, do you sense any change in philosophy to how the Rangers are going to approach, you know, a trade deadline or free agency? We know that they were certainly aggressive under Glenn. We saw it last year with the Yandel acquisition. They gave up a pretty hefty price tag in Duclair and a first-round pick. Do you get the sense that Gorton has a bit of a different philosophy than Glenn Sather did?
And I would say no, only because between Glenn and Jeff, they worked so closely hand-in-hand over the past, you know, was it four seasons or, you know, whatever it's been. Jeff's been in the organization for a while, and, you know, he was doing more and more and more as the years went by, you know. So, no, I know, you know, Glenn is no longer, quote-unquote, the GM, but, you know, Jeff really was doing a lot of that before this season anyway. You know, they really worked hand-in-hand, and in a large respect, nothing has changed in terms of their relationship. Yes, Glenn gave up the title of GM, but, you know, he's still the president, and he's still around pretty much, you know, most of the time. So, you know, I'm sure he's still in on all discussions. So I don't think anything has changed, really, in the way the Rangers are going about their business.
Andrew, we got to ask you a question about another Andrew. We talked about this quite a bit last week on the show. Larry Brooks, your colleague of the New York Post, wrote about the possibility of the Winnipeg Jets trading Andrew Ladd to the New York Rangers. And the package that was coming back kind of surprised us because there were some really good players in there, especially JT Miller, who's having a real nice season. There's Pavel Buchnevich. Dylan McIlrath, was rumored to be coming to Winnipeg. He's, of course, from Winnipeg. And then, of course, a first-round pick would be part of that package. Two-part question for you on that trade rumor. Do you think that Andrew Ladd would be a good fit with the New York Rangers, and do you think there are any legs to this rumor?
Yes, I think Andrew Ladd would be a good fit pretty much on any team. I mean, he's a heck of a player. I think he would look really good in a Rangers sweater. Do I think there's legs? I would circle back to what I just said in that the Rangers kicked the tires on everything. That being said, I do not see this franchise trading JT Miller now, given how strongly he has developed this season. You know, I know you got to give up something to get something, but to trade JT Miller now, I think would be a giant mistake on this franchise's part. I mean, they waited so long for this kid to really, really figure it out. And, you know, he's figured it out. You know, he's grown so much as a hockey player this season. He's grown so much as a person this season. I don't think you know, the one guy I walk into the room every day and I see the biggest change in just the way he conducts himself is JT Miller. I mean, the easiest way of, you know, describing it is he grew up from being a boy and he's a man now. you know, and I think he's a huge part of this franchise's future, or, you know, at least I believe he strongly should be a huge part of this franchise's future.
Andrew, I want to ask you about another young player who's part of the New York Rangers' future, and that's Kevin Hayes. I really like his game, and he had the game-winning goal three or four nights ago against the Pittsburgh Penguins, had another couple points last night versus the LA Kings. He struggled at times a little bit this year, coming off of that great rookie season. Do you think he's better suited for center or the wing, and how would you rate his second year in the NHL?
Well, his second year was really, really rough, rough up and through, you know, probably late December. He was a healthy scratch for two games, and the organization and Vigneault really, you know, verbally kicked him in the butt, you know, and it was a motivational tactic, and, you know, it was a little bit of a scare tactic too. You know, they came out and said, you know, A, they didn't like his work ethic, and B, you know, maybe the organization had overestimated his potential. And, you know, as A.V. said the other day, Kevin is a really, really sensitive kid. And if A.V. had that to do over again, he might not have said what he said, because, you know, everything I've heard is that Kevin was really taken aback and really hurt. And, you know, he had a rough time dealing with that. So he's, you know, but he's played much better, and he's been more engaged, and, you know, A.V. said, you know, the work ethic is not an issue now. So, you know, whether he would take that back or not, you know, it seemed to be effective. It seemed to have gotten through to Kevin. Whether I would play him at wing or center, I like him as a center because of his body, because of his, you know, his vision on the ice. He can make some really nice moves, you know, skating around. He had a nice spin move the other night. He holds on to the puck really, really well. I think he's very well suited to center.
Andrew, we'll let you go on this last question. As everyone knows, the Washington Capitals are running away with the Metropolitan, but if the playoffs were to start today, it's looking quite likely that we might finally see the Rangers and the Islanders in a first-round matchup. Is that just going to, you know, is it about time that we get to that matchup? And do you think, sort of on the flip side, it'll lose a little bit of its luster with that, with the Islanders not playing at the Nassau Coliseum, playing instead at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I've been writing for a couple of years. You know, I'm just dying to see this matchup.
Yeah.
You know, anyone who grew up, you know, loving hockey, you know, in New York City, you know, just relishes Ranger-Islanders matchups. They haven't met in the playoffs since 1994, and that was barely a series. The Rangers blew them out in four games on their road to the Stanley Cup. So, you know, it's really been since the 80s that these teams have had competitive playoff series. But, you know, when they did, it was memorable, and it captivated the city. But it is a little different with the Islanders in Brooklyn, and maybe it's just because it's their first year there, and, you know, it's kind of a new concept. The building isn't quite a hockey building, so it doesn't have nearly the feel that those games, you know, would at Nassau Coliseum. That said, the two regular season games at Brooklyn have been amongst, from what I've been told, the best crowds, not just in terms of attendance, but in terms of intensity at the Barclays Center. And part of that is because, you know, it winds up being about 60-40 Islander Ranger fans there. So it's a fun atmosphere, but no, it's not the Coliseum. You're not on top of the ice. It's not as loud as the Coliseum. It's not as, you know, musty and dingy as the Coliseum.
Yeah.
It's not a hockey barn. It's one of these, you know, I don't even know how to describe the Barclays Center. I just know I don't like it for hockey.
And, Andrew, if the Rangers end up playing the Islanders, we'll have to make sure that Pat Flatley and some of the ex-Islanders get a ticket to that game.
Yeah. If you could get Pat Flatley and Glenn Healy back together to do their old, you know, little comedy routines, that would be great, too, because if you remember on the old Sports Channel Center, the Heels and Flats skits were tremendous.
Andrew Gross covers the New York Rangers for the Record newspaper in New Jersey. Andrew, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
All right. You guys have a great day.
You too, Andrew.
Thanks a lot, Andrew.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we discuss the big trade between the Senators and the Leafs.
You're on the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Well, from the Ottawa Senators' perspective, what they did today was they acquired a top four defenseman. Not Dion Phaneuf, the $7 million cap hit, merely a veteran defenseman who can play in their top four. Also, it's all about the rebuild for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They got a second-round pick in the deal. They got Tobias Lindbergh, a potentially decent prospect. If they make a bunch more trades between now and the deadline, and they really solidify their position at the bottom of the league, well, the draft lottery and Austin Matthews beckon.
TSN's Bob McKenzie with his analysis of the blockbuster deal that went down earlier in the week. The main piece, of course, being Dion Phaneuf heading from the Toronto Maple Leafs a couple hours to the east to the Ottawa Senators. A big trade between in-province rivals. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. Ezzy, was this a jaw-dropper of a trade in your mind?
Well, it was certainly a big trade in the sense that there were nine players involved, Drew, but I don't think anybody should be surprised here. And that's because last year we know that the Toronto Maple Leafs were prepared to move Dion Phaneuf to the Detroit Red Wings. The Detroit Red Wings were interested in Dion Phaneuf. And the reason why apparently Detroit didn't want to go ahead with the trade is because Toronto wanted Anthony Mantha, who's a top prospect for the Detroit Red Wings. So those trade talks cooled down. But Dion Phaneuf is a player that just doesn't factor in to the future of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And we started saw the Toronto Maple Leafs last year start to retool, and they, of course, moved Phil Kessel to the Pittsburgh Penguins. But this is just the first move of many moves to come for Lou Lamoriello and Brendan Shanahan. We knew, Drew, that this team was going to be put together before the season, and then it was going to be stripped apart based on what the Toronto Maple Leafs could get for certain players, right? Sure. So if they decide that they also want to move a Tyler Bozak or a James Van Riemsdyk, not saying that these players are going to move, Nazem Kadri, whoever. I mean, the future of this team is Nylander, Mitch Marner, potentially Steven Stamkos, Austin Matthews maybe, if the Toronto Maple Leafs end up getting that first overall pick. Look, the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to get a high first-round pick. They absolutely are. You know, back to the trade, though, I mean, Dion Phaneuf, I think it's funny, Dion Phaneuf was traded to the Toronto Maple Leafs in a seven-player deal, if you remember, from Calgary.
Sure.
So it seems like Dion Phaneuf is always included in a multiplayer trade. Not just a multiplayer trade, but a trade with seven or more players. So I think that's kind of funny, first of all. But Dion Phaneuf, and Bob McKenzie touched on it a little bit, I always thought that Dion Phaneuf was miscast in Toronto, and in a city where pressure is always going to be higher than other cities, maybe with the exception of Montreal, because Toronto is the quote-unquote center of the hockey universe. I always felt like Dion Phaneuf, everybody was expecting, because he was the captain, because he was making $7 million a year, that he was going to play like a number one defenseman, meaning that everyone expected him to be a Shea Weber, a Drew Doughty, a PK Subban. Well, he's just not that good. Dion Phaneuf is not as good of a skater as those players that we mentioned. He just doesn't have that type of impact on the game. And he's regressed a little bit from his days as a Calgary Flame. Still a very solid defenseman, Drew. But Dion Phaneuf, to me, is a three or four defenseman on a good team. Like, I think the Jets have at least three, maybe four defensemen better than Phaneuf. I think the Jets' top four is all better than Phaneuf. And Phaneuf gets a lot of power play time, and he posts respectable numbers. He can get you 35, 40 points at this point in his career, absolutely. But for me, the Toronto Maple Leafs, he was expected to do way too much. Yeah. And that's a terrible defense, by the way. That's the worst defense in the NHL in Toronto.
Right now it is, certainly. And I mean, I think that's, you know, the fault for, you know, it was Brian Burke who misjudged what Dion Phaneuf was. He brought him over from Calgary, paid a hefty price for him, made him the captain of the team, gave him that large salary, sort of put too much pressure on Dion Phaneuf, and he wasn't suited for the role that the Leafs asked him to play. Now he goes to Ottawa, where he still makes a lot of money, but so be it. I mean, everybody knows what he makes. Is he going to fit in better on the Ottawa Senators, knowing that, you know, he's got Erik Karlsson, who's going to be the, you know, the star of that defense,
yep,
the star of that team? Can Dion Phaneuf sort of maybe, you know, recapture? I mean, he's, you know, he's going to be a 35 or a 40 point defenseman. They don't grow on trees. Is he going to be able to fit in better with Ottawa with really no significant pressure on him in a much easier market?
I think he will. I really do. And the Ottawa Senators right now are, you know, kind of in the middle of the pack of those Eastern Conference teams. They're not in a playoff spot right now, but they're also not that far out of a playoff spot. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for them to make the playoffs. But, you know,
they're 7 points out.
If they go on a run like they did last year, you never know, right? But it doesn't look good right now. It looks like they're not going to make the playoffs this year.
Sure.
But as far as Phaneuf fitting into this team, as you mentioned, Erik Karlsson, by the way, Erik Karlsson right now is third in the NHL in scoring.
Yeah, well,
which is incredible. He's probably going to win the Norris Trophy. Even though I don't think he's the best overall defenseman.
I don't think he is either. It's sort of unfortunate, you know, not unfortunate, but, you know, I think people get a little bit enamored of the offensive totals.
Yeah, but we've said this before, Drew. We've said that there should be a trophy for the best offensive defenseman,
sure,
and there should be a trophy for the best defenseman.
Fair enough.
Right?
Yeah.
And if you want to call it the Bobby Orr trophy, whatever. But the point being that with Erik Karlsson there, he's so good offensively, and he'll play the entire power play if he needs to.
Mm-hmm.
Dion Phaneuf can play a second pair role.
Yeah.
And you have young defensemen there like Cody Ceci, who
we'll talk about him a little bit later on in the show.
I'm a big fan of his. And look, I actually think Toronto did pretty well here in this trade. Milan Mihalik, at 31 years old, isn't the Milan Mihalik that he was 5 years ago with the San Jose Sharks. He's not as good as he was, but he's still a serviceable player. And does he factor in long-term? Maybe not. I think he's under one more year after this season.
So I promise you, if somebody calls the Leafs today and says, we want Milan Mihalik, the Leafs will make a trade and get rid of him.
Well, it's possible. Yeah. And Jared Cowan also has 1 year left on his contract. Mm-hmm. And I talked about this last week, Drew. I'm a big Jared Cowan fan. He's a big, tough defenseman. He can drop the gloves, can provide a little bit of offense, but he's more suited to a defenseman role.
He's an interesting buyout candidate as well, though, as Frank Saravelli touched on, because he only costs you one third of his salary because of he falls where he falls based on age and everything else. If the Leafs wanted to buy him out, it's only a little bit over $1 million to do so. Now, I don't think they will, because I think they see a 25-year-old defenseman who might be able to, you know, find his game again. Also, I mean, the Leafs need to reach the salary floor at some point next year.
Right. They need players, right? Yeah. And they're going to move players. They're going to move 3, 4, 5, who knows how many players they're going to move before the trade deadline.
Just call on anybody.
Right. And they're going to go out in the free agent market, and they're going to do the same thing next year.
Yeah.
Because all they're going to do is they're going to surround all the young players they have coming up. Mitch Marner, there's a good chance he makes the team next year.
Mm-hmm.
Nylander, he can make the team next year. Kasperi Kapanen. I mean, we know all of the young players that are coming up through the Leaf system.
Yeah.
So
Much to our chagrin, the Leafs are going to be good.
Well, I mean, you get a guy like Colin Greening, who's a guy you can play on your third or fourth line. I think they did pretty well here. They moved Dion Phaneuf because his salary was too high and he didn't factor in to the long-term plans. I think the Leafs are going to go after a defenseman either in the trade market or the free agency market. I think they have to.
I think this move is done for Stamkos and first and foremost.
Yeah, frees up a little money. And I think that, again, Phaneuf just didn't factor in to the long-term plans. But I think the Leafs, you got to give credit to Lou Lamoriello. I think the return he got for Phaneuf was pretty good.
Sure. Let's head to break. We'll talk more about this trade with Michael Tracos of the National Post. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
You used to call me on my cell phone. Late night when you need.
Second hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now,
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Michael Trakos. Michael is the national hockey writer for Post Media News. Michael, has the city of Toronto calmed down from the riveting celebrity basketball game as part of NBA All-Star Weekend?
You know what? I got to be honest with you. I'm not a huge basketball fan anymore, but I actually watched the game and I was like laughing to my wife. I go, you know, I think I've seen more of the celebrity basketball game than I've seen of any other game this season. And it was just to see how fat Tracy McGrady has become more than anything. Yeah, I was like, wow.
He certainly hasn't missed very many meals. I think that goes without saying.
He's still eating as though he's in the NBA, but he's not burning enough calories, clearly.
Yeah, that's been my problem for all these years, too, is that I'm eating as if I'm an NBA player without burning the calories.
Yeah, I'm on the Michael Phelps diet. I'm like 12 pancakes in the morning. That's my thing.
Yeah, Michael, they called Drew Muggsy Mandel.
Obviously, Michael, we brought you on to talk about the big trade earlier in the week. Dion Phaneuf going from Toronto to Ottawa. You know, I guess, you know, how surprised were you, first of all, that the trade was, that the Leafs were able to get Dion Phaneuf's salary off their books?
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised for so many reasons. Maybe the biggest reason I was surprised was that Dion Phaneuf actually had Ottawa on one of his teams that he sure. would be allowed to be traded to. I'm like, I wonder if he just did that as a lark. Like,
okay, well, this will never happen.
Yeah, I got to put a couple teams down. Let's put them. Let's put the Chicago Blackhawks because they got no cap space. That was the most shocking, that if he's going to get traded, it wasn't to Edmonton, it wasn't to maybe a place where you expect even like the Islanders in exchange for like a guy like Travis Hamonic. But I was shocked, and I think it's a great trade for the Leafs because where they are situated in terms of the rebuild, cap flexibility is huge. You want to be able to go after Steven Stamkos if you need to. You need to be able to sign your free agents if a guy's like William Nylander and Mitch Marner pan out in the next couple of years. And I know we're looking far ahead, but when you're talking about a rebuilding team, that's the biggest thing. It's just having that cap flexibility. So that helps them out. And, you know, I like the trade from Ottawa's perspective as well. Good on them to kind of realize that they do have a legit chance, or at least they think they have a legit chance. And guys like Jared Cowan, Milan Mihalik, and obviously Colin Greening was playing the minors, if those guys aren't going to cut it, and yet they're on your books for X amount of dollars, why not trade that in for a guy that can be a number three, number four defenseman for you? So I like the deal both ways.
Michael, those two players that you just mentioned, the two roster players that the Toronto Maple Leafs got back, Milan Mihalik and Jared Cowan, I guess Colin Greening, you know, because he has been up and down, I guess we won't count him. But of Milan Mihalik and Jared Cowan, who are they higher on, and who's more likely that might move before the trade deadline again?
I would say they're not high on any of those guys, to be honest, Drew. Or is that sorry, Ezra?
That was it. That's actually an insult to me, Michael.
It's the good looking one that asked that question.
Yeah, right. The real good looking one.
Sounded like a Drew question.
Hang on. If you know what Drew questions sound like versus what Ezra questions sound like, we're really in trouble here now.
It's like picking out a Paul song versus a John song. But. To answer your question, which is a great question, I don't think they're high on any of those guys, to be honest. I think literally they're looking at them as bodies that are being plugged as roster spots, but I don't think they're at all imagining a future with Jared Cowan on the blue line. Because you got to remember, this is a healthy scratch in Ottawa, and that's a defense where they could have used help, obviously. And I just think a guy like Jared Cowan is being phased out of the league. Those guys, those stay-at-home physical types are just kind of, they've become dinosaurs. You look at Luke Shen's career, really the last guy that's had like a solid NHL career that's still playing is a guy like Roman Polak, where he had zero offense, not much of a puck mover, but just takes care of his own end. So I think it's a matter of, A, they might buy out Jared Cowan at the end of this year, which I think is a realistic possibility, or B, they just kind of live with them until his contract comes off the books. And I think it's the same way with Mihalik, who's up there in years, and Colin Greening, who is a borderline NHL or probably an AHL or on a really good team.
Michael, just to stay on the Dion Phaneuf trade, and then we can get into the slam dunk competition in a bit here.
Thank you.
how important was it for the Toronto Maple Leafs to get the second round pick from Ottawa? And Tobias Lindbergh, I don't know a lot about him, but why did they want him included in the trade?
Yeah, okay. So I'll start with Tobias Lindbergh. He's got a relationship with Mike Babcock's assistant coach, the DJ Bean or Breen. However you want to pronounce his name, he was the Oshawa Generals head coach when Tobias played there, so there's a lot of familiarity. And Mark Hunter, who knows every single player that's passed through the OHL, has a lot of experience just kind of watching Tobias. So they're probably high on him as a probably B-level prospect, which means maybe one day he grows up to be a second or third line player at the very best. So it was important getting the prospect, I think, for Phaneuf. And the bigger thing, obviously, is that second-round pick. And it's not for this year's draft, but it's for next year's. And right now, the scouting department is just trying to accumulate as many picks as possible. And the Leafs have a first-round pick belonging to the Penguins that, as long as Pittsburgh makes the playoffs, the Leafs will get. And I almost imagine that they're going to trade that pick for two second-round picks as well. So it's just a matter of just stockpiling as many bullets kind of in the gun right now.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Michael Tracos. We're discussing the big trade from earlier in the week, Dion Phaneuf going from Toronto to Ottawa. Michael, you know, is Morgan Rielly the only untouchable player on the, you know, the Leafs' current roster, or could he even be had for the right price?
No, I would consider him an untouchable. I think it would take a lot of it would take a huge player coming back in return for them to think about trading Rielly, just because of the potential, but also because he's a defenseman, and this team, aside from Rielly and Gardner, you look at the minor league system, there's no defensemen that are coming up that could possibly challenge for a top three spot on the blue line. So they're really thin back there, and I would imagine Riley's the only guy that they think, okay, here's a guy that can grow up to be a number one defenseman and got all the tools in the box to do that. He can skate well. He plays physical. Obviously, he can put up a lot of points, and this year he's shown that he can play on the power play and the penalty kill. So aside from that, yeah, I think the next shoe to drop, really, I think we're going to see Nazem Kadri get traded. I think as days go on, he's the guy that I think Lamoriello and Shanahan are looking at. Okay, we can get easily a first-round pick, maybe a really good prospect, and I wonder if a Kadri gets dangled out there, and they'll be afraid. They'll be surprised if it's dangled out there to a team like even Tampa Bay for a guy like Jonathan Drouin.
Michael, is Nazem Kadri a guy that just doesn't factor in to the Leafs' plans, or is he a guy that just doesn't want to be there?
I think he wants to be there. I just don't think he might factor into the plans. He plays with grit. He plays a real competitive game, especially this year. We've seen that out of him. But he's another smaller size forward, and they've got Mitch Marner, who's tiny. They got William Nylander, who's slight. They've got a couple of European prospects and Connor Brown. They're all really small forwards. So having another center and a number two center in Kadri, who's small, it's probably not going to fit into their long-term plans. And I think right now with him being a RFA and really showing this year that he can play on both ends of the ice, I think now is the time to really capitalize on him. And who knows what they get in the draft this year. If they get an Austin Matthews, well, sure. That helps them a lot, because you got Matthews as your number one center, and you could quite possibly have either Nylander or Marner as your number two center, depending on what positions those guys play at the NHL level. But yeah, I just see the more and more in the way that they're building up Dion Phaneuf, and Babcock was constantly pumping his tires to the media, I see a lot of the same thing happening with Nazem Kadri, and I wonder if it's just to really sell this guy to the league and put him up there on the trade market.
Michael, when you talk about the Leafs, I got to say, it reminds me of another team in the NHL. You talk about slight forwards. You talk about not a great defense, you know, after Morgan Rielly and Jake Gardiner, maybe. You talk about a team with a lot of goaltending questions. You talk about a team that's going to get a high draft pick. It sounds a lot like the Edmonton Oilers. So what do the Leafs, I mean, how are the Leafs going to prevent themselves from being the new, the 2016 version of the Edmonton Oilers?
Man, oh man, that is the million-dollar question, because everyone has been praising Babcock and Lamoriello, Shanahan and Lamoriello, for breaking apart and selling off the Phil Kessels and the David Clarksons and the Dion Phaneuf. But the challenge is you got to replace those guys and you've got to build a competitive team. And yeah, you're right. Edmonton hasn't been able to figure out that formula. Even Buffalo is really struggling to figure that out, despite getting guys like Evander Kane and Ryan O'Reilly, who are a little longer in terms of their development, or I mean, maybe they're even considered veteran players. So neither of those teams have figured it out so far. So it is a challenge. A lot of people think, okay, just follow that Chicago Blackhawks model or LA Kings model and bottom out a couple years, get your Jonathan Toews and your Andre Kopitars and go from there. But lately, it's been a struggle for a lot of those bottom-feeding teams. Florida sort of figured it out, but it took them forever as well. So we'll have to see. If they get lucky in the draft, that obviously helps. But I think you got to be prudent in free agency. I think, if anything, in the last few years have shown that you make a mistake in free agency and you pay a guy above slot, it really hampers your team. And I think that's what kind of Tampa Bay is looking at right now is, do you spend the money on Stamkos at the detriment of having a balanced roster, or do you let him go, as hard as that is, and maybe fill his spot with two or three other guys and have a more balanced lineup? So it's going to be the challenge going ahead to free agency, because Toronto now has the cap dollars. It's just a matter of how do they wisely spend it so that it doesn't hurt them long down the road.
Michael, with a couple of months left in the season here, the Leafs most likely aren't going to make the playoffs unless they go on a really crazy run, similar to the Winnipeg Jets.
Negative Nancy here.
Yeah. Okay, I'll be glass half full. I mean, the Leafs are going to make the playoffs this year. They're going to finish an eighth in the Eastern Conference. No, in all seriousness, though, how hard is it to rate? I know it's tough to take me seriously, Michael, but
that's an Ezzy question for the record there, Michael.
You know, he was joking. How hard is it to rate Mike Babcock's first year as coach as with the Toronto Maple Leafs, considering that half of these guys might not be here next year?
Yeah, that's a good point. And a colleague of mine, Mike Zeisberger, and I were kind of debating that. Just saying, obviously, he's not going to be in the talk for the Jack Adams Award as Coach of the Year, but how good of a job has he done in coaching? And there's a couple of things I'd point to, and one is that there haven't been as many embarrassing losses. Obviously, that loss against Edmonton the other night was embarrassing, but that's a minor league team that he had. Like, he was missing Bozak, Sean Mathias, Joffrey Leupold, and obviously Dion Phaneuf had just been traded, so they had a lot of minor league players. And really, you look at the roster that he's been given all year, and they're a couple of horses short of a stable, really. They don't have the thoroughbreds that they had last year in terms of Phil Kessel, where you could bank on him at least being a difference maker offensively in most games. And Ben Riemsdyk's been out. And when Leo Komarov is your lone all-star and was your leading scorer, that just speaks to the kind of talent level. And yet Mike Babcock's got them playing at least a competitive game on most nights, where they're trying to win a game 2-1 because they don't have the firepower. And sometimes the goaltending has been there and they've been able to eke out those wins. And when it's not there, it looks like those nights in Edmonton. So I like the job he's done. I think this year was just about laying down that foundation where once you do get the talent, once you get the Marners and the Nylanders and maybe an Austin Matthews or whoever, that they can just kind of slip right in, play that same style, and now you've got the guys who are difference makers and go from there. So I think in terms of step one towards the rebuild, he's done a pretty admirable job. Obviously, it hasn't been surprising enough where Toronto's going to compete for a playoff spot, but I think nine out of 10 people would tell you that that wasn't even an expectation.
16 days from today, Michael, the Tampa Bay Lightning at the Toronto Maple Leafs on Monday, February 29th. We'll know a lot more about what's going on there, and I think Stamkos Watch will be at an absolute fever pitch that night.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing that he's actually going to be here for trade deadline day in Toronto. It doesn't work out any – it couldn't work out any better than that. And yet, I am going on the record saying I would be completely shocked if Stamkos gets traded at the deadline. I just – when you look at where Tampa is, what they could be in the playoffs, like that is such a weak Eastern Conference right now. Aside from Washington, it is basically wide open. That's why it really sucks that Montreal hasn't been able to put it together. And that's probably why Ottawa saw the opportunity and saying, okay, if we get a Dion Phaneuf, maybe we can be a playoff team and get lucky and win a couple rounds. But So if you're Tampa Bay and you're going to trade Stamkos and you're going to get basically prospects, draft picks back and ruin your chances of going deep in the Stanley Cup final, I don't know how that makes more sense than keeping the guy and possibly losing him to free agency for nothing. So I'd be really surprised if Steve Yzerman pulls off a Stamkos trade, even if they know they're not going to sign him. So maybe you trade his rights at the end of the season. Maybe you try a sign and trade because you can tack on an extra year if you're re-signing a player versus signing him at a free agency. You can go to 8 years versus seven. So maybe that's a possibility. But there's no way in my mind he gets traded at the deadline.
So, Michael, where are you and Drake partying tonight?
Oh, yeah. I wonder if he's going to come up to my suburban town of Newmarket, and probably not. We're getting such a cold snap this weekend. It's just ridiculous. Like, my dog won't even go out, and he's like, normally he would go out in any kind of cold or weather, whatever. So I am not leaving the house today. I'm going to be watching the NBA All-Star skills competition from the comfort of the living room.
Yeah, well, they call Drake Drizzy, and they call me Druzy, so we have a lot in common, of course.
Oh, boy.
Michael Trakos covers the National Hockey League for Post Media. He's the National
Hockey
writer.
That was just awful.
Thank you.
Was that an Ezra joke?
No, that was a Drew joke that didn't go over very well anyways. Michael, thank you, buddy.
All right, thanks, guys.
I'll do it again soon.
Cheers.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Michael Trakos of Post Media News for joining us to talk about the FNUF trade to Ottawa. Before him, we were joined by Andrew Gross of the Record newspaper in New Jersey. Both of those interviews available for download later on today on LegalCurve.com and TSN1290.ca. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom made mouth guard is a must have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Ezzy, TSN's Craig Button came out earlier this week with his ranking of top 50 NHL-affiliated prospects. These are players that have been drafted by a team in the NHL, currently don't play in the league, play either in junior or over in Europe or in the NCAA or in the AHL. At the top of that list was Toronto Maple Leafs prospect William Nylander, who's been tearing up the AHL, 40 points in 30 games. Winnipeg Jets had one player in Craig Button's top 50, Kyle Connor, coming in fifth overall. He, of course, now has 44 points in 25 games in the NCAA. Actually, might have a couple more now. I'm not sure when that stat is exactly from. Are you surprised that the Jets only had one player in Craig Button's top 50? Does that concern you at all?
No, it doesn't concern me, Drew, and I'm not that surprised that there's only one. Jack Roslovic would probably be the other one.
Yeah,
he's having a good year in the NCAA as well. He was, of course, the Jets' second first-round pick at the 2015 draft in Florida, so I'm not that surprised. Kyle Connor, you expect him to be there. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, I mean, he's the favorite right now for the Hobey Baker Award. We talked to George Sipple of the Detroit Free Press last week about Kyle Connor. He's on the best line in the NCAA right now with Tyler Motte and JT Compher, who's a Colorado Avalanche prospect. He came over in the Ryan O'Reilly trade. So not that surprised. And, you know, William Nylander is having a great year, as you mentioned, for the Toronto Marlies. Kasperi Kapanen, also a Leafs prospect who came over in the Phil Kessel trade, he's having a good season. So not that surprised for the Jets, because a lot of the Jets' top prospects are either playing for the Jets or with the Moose right now. So you're talking about Connor Hellebuck and Eric Comrie and Nett playing for the Moose.
But the AHL players are eligible for that top 50 list as well.
Well,
I mean, my surprise is that Eric Comrie's not on that list. I mean, I know his numbers aren't great, but his, you know, 3.13 goals against, 907 save percentage.
Don't look at his numbers because the Manitoba Moose aren't having a good season right now. And if you ask anybody, I mean, he won the MVP at the All-Star game.
That's
he's one of the best goalies in the AHL right now.
Exactly. That's my point, is that the fact he's not on that list is surprising to me. I think people maybe just look at his numbers and say, oh, he's obviously not having a great year. But the reality, of course, is you watch the Moose play and you watch Eric Comrie, he might give up 4 goals a game. But, I mean, if it wasn't for him, they'd be giving up 14 goals a game. He's been that good. So, to me, Eric Comrie should be on the list of top 50 prospects, not yet in the NHL. And I think he's certainly up there. I mean, the Jets certainly have nothing that he has done this year would give the Jets any pause about what his future is going to look like.
To be honest, Drew, I didn't look at the list and... You know, I
too busy planning Valentine's Day. I understand.
I didn't realize that the list was including players that are currently playing pro hockey.
Yeah.
But you know, when you consider that the Winnipeg Jets have quite a few good prospects in the system, and I'm pretty sure the Hockey News rated them number one last year as far as top prospects in the system. Even guys like Eric Foley and Jansen Harkins are having good seasons. Those are both 2015 draft picks as well. I mean, the Jets have a lot of good, young, talented players. And, I mean, a guy like Nick Petan, you could probably say, is a top 50. If we're counting guys that are playing pro hockey,
yeah,
a little bit surprised.
That's what Craig Button's
a little
doing.
Surprised Petan's not there.
I'm not surprised. I mean, if you then what Craig Button does, he ranks then the team, regardless of the top 50, he looks at the top 5 prospects in each Canadian market. He's got Kyle Connor number one. Producer Rory informs me Connor got another couple points. He's up to 46 points now in 26 games. He's got Ross Levick number two, who's playing obviously at Miami, Ohio in the NCAA. Comrie is his 3rd ranked Jets prospect, a little bit low in my books. Morrissey is 4th. As he continues to play and develop his game at the Manitoba Moose level in the AHL. And then Brendan Lemieux in Windsor of the OHL now, he's the 5th ranked prospect by the Jets, according to Craig Button.
Craig Button knows a lot more about prospects than I do, but I would put Petan at least number 3. I mean, Patan's the only guy out of all those players that's actually played in the NHL. Again, we're talking about, this is his list.
Sure.
Prospects who aren't playing in the NHL, including guys in the AHL, right?
Yeah.
So if we're talking about all these guys, Nick Petan is farther ahead than Josh Morrissey is.
Yeah, but what I mean, I'm not 100% certain about how bright Petan's future is to be a regular NHL player.
He's already played in the NHL.
I know, but
Morrissey hasn't.
I agree. I mean, but you know, you can make an argument if Petan is going to be able to, you know, perform as he has at the AHL level at the next step up.
Well, you don't. You can say that about any of these players.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
I'm just saying you're asking me what I think of this list, which I haven't really looked at thoroughly. And as far as the Jets go, I mean, sure, Eric Comrie. Well, is Connor Hellebuck still a prospect?
Well, no, I think Connor Hellebuck wouldn't be considered a prospect because the list came out while he was still with the Jets.
Well, yeah, I mean, if we're talking about all of the Jets
guys who are not in the NHL.
I might put Eric Comrie ahead of Kyle Connor. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Eric Comrie, I've seen him play, and I'm going to the Moose game today, actually, as well.
Thanks for the invite.
Well, I'm... And
that's okay. Didn't invite me. I don't take it personally.
Well, you can come if you want.
No, I'm good.
Eric Comrie's been excellent from what I've seen and from what I've heard. I've gone to a couple of games this year at the MTS Center, and he's been in net for both games. He's been excellent. And I think he could be in the NHL as early as next year, to be honest with you. Might not happen with the glut of goaltenders that they have now. But point being that I think Eric Comrie projects to be an excellent goaltender. I mean, there's a lot of guys that you could project to be good players. I mean, Chase DeLeo's having a good year. I think he projects as a good third liner in the NHL. He's not even in the top 5 right now. JC LaPonne is another guy who's having a good season right now with the Manitoba Moose. So, I mean, again, these lists are very subjective. Craig Button does an awesome job for TSN with scouting. And, you know, there's probably another 50 guys that you could make arguments that should be on this list, right? But it's tough to knock out guys that are more established and higher draft picks, right?
Sure.
I mean, who of these players at the bottom of the list is a guy like Eric Comrie gonna knock out? I don't know. So, you know,
like you said, it's a subjective list.
The Jets have a good stable of prospects, Drew. I wouldn't read too much into this.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll cycle back to tonight's opponent for the Winnipeg Jets. That's the Edmonton Oilers. We'll be joined by Dave Jamieson from our sister station, TSN 1260 in Edmonton. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.